to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
So, Fred, all this week, Doug McBurney, my son Dominic Enyart, had to fill in for me because of laryngitis. But I'm just well enough to do the show.
Get over it.
Yeah, and we have two fun news stories for the whole program. The first sounds like it should be fake news, but it's not. The whale in the Amazon forest. The second, well, it really is fake news.
The second one is for sure fake news.
From NASA and the Fox News Channel. But why don't we start with the whale?
Yeah. There's a humpback whale that they found ashore in Brazil. Yeah. And I'm not talking about a fossil. I'm talking about something that just died recently.
An actual carcass.
A carcass.
It's hardly decomposed. There's photos and videos of these fishermen who found this thing. And they discovered it in the Amazon jungle. And they're wondering what in the world it's doing. It was lodged in thick shrubs and brush. And it's about 50 feet in off the shore.
50 feet in. So, that's a pretty good journey for a whale.
So, Fred, I don't know why they're all shocked. Because isn't this what they say, how all of biology works?
Yeah, let's think about this. So, didn't life come out of the ocean?
Well, right.
And then something happened.
And the fish started coming up on land.
Yeah.
Because they had ambitions. They didn't just want to be marine creatures. So then some mammals evolved, and then they went back in the sea to become whales.
Yeah, because they couldn't explain why whales are, you know, in the ocean when life is supposed to come from the
ocean. And they're mammals, right.
Yeah, they're mammals. A mammal made its way back into the ocean.
So now this must simply be a whale either trying to get back home, or he just has that early urge, that ambition to be a land-dwelling creature.
Yeah. He wants to know about his origins.
Yeah. So maybe he, you know, they tell students that whales have pelvic bones.
Yeah.
Maybe he really got up on the shore and just started to inch for. Maybe he started to use his flippers. Maybe he rolled. Maybe he did a headstand and flipped long ways.
Maybe we could do a video or a graphic. You know, we've actually got a really good whale page. I've used it before in some of my talks. Oh. I think the whale page you put together at rsr.org/whales is easily the best resource on the web. In fact, if you do a search for problems with whale evolution, it's number one on the list out of like 6 million possibilities.
It's stunning, Fred. People are finding Real Science Radio from around the country, around the world even, and it's very humbling, and that's nice of what you said. You know, I really do think we updated that page this week because of a listener who went over to our YouTube channel and made a comment and suggested that we add something to our whale page. So I commented back and I said, you know, that page, it's a masterpiece. Every single item on it is weighed for its value and its brevity. So to add something is a big deal. And he made an argument that, no, we really should add this short video clip off of YouTube from Dr. David Berlinski on whale evolution, so it's now on the page.
Okay, great.
Yeah, just awesome.
And Bob, on that page, you've got two graphics that I just love.
They're brand new, too.
Yeah, because they show the actual bones that were found compared to the imagined version that they put into, like, textbooks.
Of Rhodocetus and Pachycetus. These are, like, two of the biggies.
Yeah, I remember college textbook I have said that whale evolution is becoming increasingly well-documented.
Yes.
And then the very first evidence that it gives was, and Pachycetus is known from a skull.
Fred,
and it turns out it was a piece of skull. Now they found more.
A piece of skull. Now they found the whole skeleton. So on the cover of the journal Science, we have the cover right there. We scanned it, put it on our whale page, rsr.org/whales. You see what it looks like. It looks like a very well-adapted marine mammal. That's what it looks like with its flippers and its tail. Then we have the actual skeleton that they later found more than just part of the skull. And it's just the normal tetrapod. It's a four-legged creature. It looks like a dog skeleton or a wolf.
Yeah, it does. That imagined picture of Pachycetus that the artist, you know, the evolutionary artist, you know, took their liberties on.
Right.
That thing maybe would have done a pretty good job of getting on shore It would have probably got more than 50 feet.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah. And then this other graphic, and again, these are all brand new. People haven't been to our whale page in a while. I think you'll want to go look at it. rsr.org/whales. This one is of Rhodocetus. And so Cetus is whale. So yeah. Pachycetus, they found it in Pakistan.
Yeah.
This professor and his student, they found
almost... Rhodo, is that he's on a road trip?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Because, Fred, it's like a cottage industry. These two guys, Philip Gingrich and his student, they found almost all of the whale fossils. Wherever they go, I tell you, if a dog runs across Gingrich's path, he must say, get that whale out of here. Everything looks like
exactly.
a whale to this guy.
Yeah.
So they imagined Rhodocetus, and it looks, what? It has flippers and a fluke tail, has its blowhole. It's got all that. And so here's the actual skeleton of the rear hind legs. It couldn't be more completely opposite. And they lack the humility to say, you know, we got this creature completely wrong.
Yeah, not partially wrong or a little wrong. Completely wrong.
Completely wrong. So we're going to remove it from the whale lineage. No, it's too big to fail. They don't have the humility. And so they've just changed it. It's still a whale.
Yeah.
The back of that thing, it looks like it more like a white rhinoceros.
Yeah.
Fred, the way they play games with skeletons and reconstruction, it reminds me of that interview we did with one of our favorite scientists, Dr. Jack Kuzo. Remember on Neanderthal?
Oh, yeah. That was an excellent show.
Oh.
And we've got a lot of great comments, too, on the internet on that one.
Oh, yes.
On YouTube.
He went over to Europe and... he x-rayed the Neanderthal skulls in all the world's leading museums that had Neanderthal skulls. And he passed away. He pointed out, being an orthodontist, he's an expert. He said they misaligned the jaws because that's not all. You could tell how the teeth occlude and all.
Yeah.
That's not how it was in life. And they jut out the jaw to make it look more ape-like.
Exactly.
And Neanderthal... their DNA is fully human. It's closer to you and me than a chimp is to another chimp genetically within the same species of chimp.
That's right.
So they, in reconstruction, their bias enables them to get the animal completely wrong. And so Rhodocetus, Pachycetus, what a page, rsr.org/whales.
Yeah, Dr. Kuzo had a great book that he documented this in called Buried Alive. It's actually a really fun read. It's like reading Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first part of it, just because of the troubles he went through to go to these different museums, and they did not like what he was doing.
Yes. So, I mean, it was rude of us, right, to title it the most informative Neanderthal show ever. But if somebody produces... a more informative show, we'll change it to the second most informative Neanderthal show ever.
Okay, so now we have a fake news headline on the fake news channel.
Wow, that's rough, Fred.
Fox News is really bad, especially when it comes. Yeah,
here.
But when it comes to science, they're really bad.
And politics. No, anyway, I'm Republican.
Yeah.
But still.
Republican?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, FNC, fake news channel.
Yeah.
What, you're saying they have a fake news headline?
Yeah,
this is from NASA. It can't be too fake.
Yeah, it was in the headline part of their page. I mean, on the very top part, it said, NASA was able to recreate the origins of life, and the results are shocking.
Whoa, NASA recreated the origins of life. So this is a fake news headline.
Absolutely.
It's fake news from NASA.
Yeah.
It's fake science. It's on the fake news
All
channel, FNC. So this is really a mess.
Yeah, and to be consistent with themselves, they start out, right out of the gate, they're fake news. It starts with, a new NASA study has recreated the origins of life.
Right. You can't get more fake, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't get more fake. So they recreated the origins of life by building the ocean's floor. So, Fred, they built the floor of an ocean from 4 billion years ago.
Wow, that's pretty incredible.
That is awesome. Imagine getting all that. Imagine what that had to cost the taxpayers to get all that water, say a mile and a half, 2 miles deep, over thousands of square miles, just to do one experiment.
And the trick to go back 4 billion years ago to get that ocean floor.
Yeah, to make sure it's the right consistency. So, Fred, this was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is fake science news. You did a show, I wasn't in the studio a couple years ago, and you did it on Fake Science News, and you got a great graphic. We'll have to put that graphic. It's a warning, fake news, only fake science news.
Yeah, that's right.
You list all these journals. In fact, people could see it right now. It's at rsr.org/fake news, fake-news.
So their goal with this ocean from 4 billion years ago is an attempt to understand how life started on Earth without God. They didn't put that in. You know, they should have, right?
Yeah, they should have said that, right? They didn't, Fred.
Yeah.
They say their goal is to understand how life started on Earth.
Yeah.
And most Americans believe that God was involved in the origin of human life. In fact, Fred, you and I just did our show, Scientists, our list of scientists doubting Darwin. Do you remember the percentage of U.S. medical doctors? 60%. That's over 500,000. They're not uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
They're experts in the field of applied biology. 60% believe that human life originated with God, either that he specially created mankind or that he guided the process. 60%. Here's Fox News trying to manipulate their readers into thinking, well, obviously it's without God. If you think God was involved, you're not educated like we are and like NASA is.
Yep.
So that secular bias, it reeks throughout this whole article. And then there's this bait and switch, Fred. They point out that they're recreating the ocean floor, right? Life has to start where there's water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, where there's water.
Yeah, I think you and
I We've done a really good show on that, too.
Yeah, we in fact, put a question to a NASA astrobiologist, and it was the first time in their history they had to answer that question in public. But before that, they pull this bait and switch, don't they, about water? Everybody knows that water maintains life.
Yeah, water maintains life, so therefore water can originate life, right?
That's the bait and switch, and they do it all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're very manipulative. So this study was conducted by NASA astrobiologists.
What's an astrobiologist?
That's a fake field of science. It really is. They study alien biology without the aliens. And it's like an MD who specializes in, say, Vulcan physiology.
Or purple blood.
Or maybe a Ferengi ear, nose, and throat guy. Or how about a Klingon chiropractor?
Wow, that would be quite the job.
It's all crazy. It's fake science. And Fred, we talked to one of the leaders of the whole field, Dr. Mary Wojtek. She's the lead astrobiologist at NASA. And what a show that was we did last summer, where NASA was participating in Germany in a very high-profile science conference put on by the AAAS, American Association for the Advancement of Science. They're all godless, Darwinist
and all.
Yeah, they
do the Science magazine.
Yeah, right, the Journal
of
Science. And
that's the group they took that poll to find out that 98% of scientists believe in evolution.
Yeah, they pulled their own group.
Yeah, they pulled that group.
Right, exactly. So, Fred, the news editor at Science, he was the moderator. And in a moment, we'll play the audio with him asking our question that we submitted, Real Science Radio, to Dr. Mary Wojtek about water being not a help for life to originate, but water is the problem because water dissolves all the chemical building blocks that you need for life.
Isn't it the universal solvent?
It really is. And we put a list and we put some of these items in the question to Mary Wojtek, but water, it actually dissolves the chemical building blocks that you need for life.
Yeah,
outside of life.
Yeah. So first, amino acids, which are the building blocks for proteins,
right.
It dissolves those.
Dissolves proteins.
It dissolves sugars. You know, sugars like RNA. You heard of RNA, right?
Oh yeah, that's important.
Have you heard of DNA?
Yeah, that's a deoxyribonucleic acid.
Fred, so you don't want the water to get, like on dinosaur bones where they've discovered DNA. Right. If water got a hold of that bone, then it's going to dissolve.
It decomposes those biological molecules. Monosaccharides, disaccharides, peptides, all kinds of peptides. Water dissolves them. Non-peptide ribosome Enzymes.
You asked an Australian scientist about that because it was his specialty, and he was so delighted somebody asked him about non-peptide ribosome enzymes.
Yeah, he was.
You had to made his day.
Yeah, he said, I don't usually
about this.
Get questions about my specialty. But also, it dissolves all kinds of polymers, all kinds of carbohydrates. So, yes, if you have a living organism, it requires water, and it manages water. But if you have a dead organism, it decomposes that organism, it dissolves it. And if you had the polymers and the biological molecules you need to make a living cell, it takes those molecules apart.
Yep.
That's what water does. So let's hear this Tim Appenzeller, who works for Science.
Yeah, he was the moderator.
Put this question to Mary Wojtek, she's the NASA astrobiologist, and then he explains a little bit, and you could tell it sort of catches her off guard, but let's hear it.
And I'd like to ask one that is from Bob, an independent science reporter, and the question is, rather than an asset, isn't water the enemy of prebiotic molecules? And outside of a living organism, it dissolves life's building blocks like amino acids, sugars like RNA and DNA, various kinds of carbohydrates and other polymers. Shouldn't this chemical challenge be more openly acknowledged in astrobiology? I guess this assumes it's not acknowledged, but what do you say?
I think it's acknowledged.
Liar.
I'm not exactly, I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have is understanding the evolution from simple compounds that can be made abiotically towards more organized and more highly functional biomolecules that are important for life. So I guess I don't understand.
And so water is a challenge, how these molecules survive.
Oh, because of water? Sorry, yes. I guess I didn't get it.
Well, I think the question is, it posits that water is a challenge because it attacks the various molecules involved.
So in some of the prebiotic things, this is something that people think about. Hydration and dehydration reactions are really important in prebiotic chemistry. And so postulating that life could evolve when there is no opportunity for an environmental separation to allow dehydration reactions actually is a problem, and people do address that. And whether it's, you know, you need a continent, which some people, you know, life couldn't evolve until we had land so we could get away from the water, or there's other ways to separate it. There can be phase separation with ice and water. There can be a variety of other ways that you can get dehydration reactions. And so I think that is very important and recognized.
Thank you.
So, Fred, you possibly need continents so that you can get away from the water so that your material could dehydrate so that the water doesn't dissolve it. And when Mary Wojtek, she said, I think we acknowledge that. Well, this is a perfect opportunity. NASA recreates the origins of life at the bottom of the ocean. And why don't they say, oh, and by the way, we have to dehydrate it. Otherwise, the water will tear apart these molecules. And not only that, but the oxygen, they had to take the oxygen out because that would oxidize the products of their experiments.
Yeah, so Bob, this Lori Barge, who we think probably works for this Mary Wojtek that we just heard on the
She probably reports to Mary.
Yeah. She and her team were able to recreate the seafloor by filling beakers. This is quoting the article.
Wait,
it says
beakers. I thought they recreated the ocean floor.
Well, I guess, they got it into a beaker.
Okay. Okay, in a lab, a beaker.
A beaker.
You know, if you have a chemist on a commercial, he has to hold up a beaker and look at it. It has to have colored fluids in it. Like this one's blue, this one's orange. Has to be.
So true.
Anyway, they did that here.
Yep.
Mary was probably overseeing the project.
Yeah, and the article goes on to say that this beaker of water, basically, was similar to the primordial ocean, which includes water, minerals, and ammonia, and pyruvate.
So that's an acid. So, Fred, first of all, the primordial ocean, why wouldn't it be a block of ice? Because billions of years ago, they say in their model that the sun was not nearly as hot as it is today. It's called the cool young sun model.
The cool young sun?
It's almost like sun young moon. It's a different cult. Same idea. Anyway, they do have a hard time, Fred, getting the oceans to be liquid back then. And what they do is they try to tweak the atmosphere so that it captures more heat. And then as the sun is getting hotter, magically, the atmosphere keeps changing so that it captures less and less heat. Anyway, aside from all that, when you go back in their imagination, this is all fake science. It's all make-believe what things would have been like 4 billion years ago. But so they say, okay, we're taking these test tubes, these beakers, and we're putting in water, all right?
Yeah.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
Minerals, which minerals? Ammonia and pyruvate. That's an acid.
Yeah.
So,
and this chemist with his different colored beakers, now he's got his Bunsen kit, right?
Yeah, he does.
Bunsen burner.
So this pyruvate, Fred, it's made from glucose. So they're sort of cheating in one way.
Mm-hmm.
And in another way, all they're doing is they're being intelligent chemists pretending that without intelligence, you could make the ingredients you need for life.
Yeah.
So they
point.
Do this all the time. Yep. They sneak intelligence into their experiments. Incredibly complex. I mean, we could talk to Dr. James Tour, who's the world's most accomplished molecular chemist. And he points out that making these molecules is the most incredibly sophisticated process,
mm-hmm.
and how absurd it is to think that the compounds you need for a living cell could come together all at the same time, in the same place, in the same microplace, and all perform the right functions to get a living organism.
Kind of reminds me of our three-in-one challenge to Richard Dawkins.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Because in that one, remember, Will Duffy and I, my producer back then, we were in Oxford doing some research for a debate, and we stopped off at Richard Dawkins. He teaches at New College. I think he's semi-retired,
mm-hmm.
but he still teaches there. And he has this fluff course, the popularization of evolution or something like that. And we got this challenge as far as his faculty inbox. So it's in there. So we don't know if he actually saw it, but most likely he did. It's the Richard Dawkins 3-to-1 evolution challenge. And we basically say, using the laws of physics and chemistry, how could a code arise? A code, like a genetic code.
Mm-hmm.
Only we say the simplest part, just every three letters on your DNA, they code for a single amino acid. So just that 3-to-1 correspondence, Dr. Dawkins, how could that arise? Just the 3-to-1 code.
It'd be interesting to see if he ever took up that challenge.
Yeah.
Remember when he was asked about information, how information could arise naturally?
Oh, that and was the most embarrassing
video clip. Yeah, and he just sat there with a blank stare on his face.
Now, P.Z. Myers, he's a famous evolutionist. He responded to our trochlea challenge,
mm-hmm.
and he said, the simplest part of the whole vision system, you know, just give us a rough idea how that could evolve via Darwinian mechanism. And he said, I don't know. Which is honest, but you spent your whole career,
yeah.
and this is the simplest. This is not the hardest. So this is the simplest aspect of the genome, which is the basis of the genetic code. Every three rungs on the DNA double helix spiral staircase, every three rungs code for a single amino acid. How could that scheme arise?
Yeah. Yep.
So simple.
It's Yes, very simple.
And
it can only arise by intelligence, so actually, you know, we know the answer.
Right. But you can't have a code without intelligence.
That's right.
And so they'll never even take a step toward answering that question.
Yep.
That's our prediction.
So back to our chemist, this Lori Bard, with her beakers in hand, she gets her Bunsen heater and heats this thing up to 158 degrees Fahrenheit.
All right.
Removed the oxygen and added iron hydroxide.
Okay, now they remove the oxygen. And that's James Tour makes this point when he speaks. They have all these sophisticated steps using an incredible amount of knowledge. And nobody ever said that you can't build molecules if you know what you're doing. Nobody ever said that.
Yeah.
So they are removing the oxygen because they don't want it to burn the output of their experiment. And what is it that they make? Well, they're producing amino acid, alanine, and the alpha hydroxy acid. So these are two acids that they make.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred, peruvic acid has long been known to be used to make alanine. That's been long. They know that. They mm-hmm. they know that's the foundation from which you can make an alanine acid. And the same thing with alpha hydroxy acid. That's another long synthesized acid. So they bundle this up and they sell it to this apparent atheist science reporter at the fake news Fox News channel. And he reports it as though it's all real, as though it's actual science. Yeah.
So basically, they created, using a lot of manipulation, they created some simple letters. It's like, you know, having a, maybe a couple tiles on a Scrabble board. But are you producing a book, intelligence, a code?
Right.
None of that's a code.
Right.
I thought you had a great point on that's related to the abortion debate and what atheists think. They want to insist that these little pieces are life, yet they'll look at a baby in the womb and say, oh, that's not life.
Whoa.
Or they wonder if it is.
Fred, we have the greatest graphic to that effect. At the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, I got to informally debate their curator, Kirk Johnson. Ever since, I've called him Captain Kirk. And they say that life was created in the laboratory decades ago, but they have a question mark after that exhibit title. Life created in the lab, question mark. And what was made was a few amino acids. Acids.
Yeah.
You have Barack Obama speaking of a baby in a womb and being asked, is that life? And he says, that's above my pay grade.
Yeah.
So what hypocrites these leftists are. They take, and so we made a meme. It's one of the best memes in the history of memes. It shows the diagram of the amino acids that were made in the lab back in the 1950s. And it's just a handful of atoms that are attached in a molecule.
Yeah, and it says life. There's life, an arrow pointing to it.
Right. And then there's the baby, and this is called the teardrop baby. This is from an ectopic pregnancy, the baby outside of the womb. And this precious little baby, you could see the doctor's fingers holding this teardrop sac. And there's this little tiny baby. You can see how beautifully he's formed. And they say that baby is not life.
Yep.
Those molecules, acid, they think that might be life. And the baby with his tens of billions of cells fully functioning, growing, plus with his soul and his spirit and his mind all that. And they say that's not life.
Yeah.
These hypocrites.
Yeah, it's astounding, the hypocrisy and man.
But Dominic, on the show this Wednesday, he pointed out that they really used to say it's not life. Today, a lot of pro aborts, they couldn't care less. They just say, sure, it's life and we're killing it. Who cares?
Yeah.
Some of them will even say it's murder, but who cares?
Yep.
Because they've been taught in our public schools for decades now, there's no such thing as right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if it feels good, do it.
Yeah. And yet they're going to preach to us morality all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They can't identify that a genocide is wrong, but they're going to tell us there's no difference between a boy and a girl.
Wow.
Right.
They're on top of things. Not want to be them on Judgment Day.
No.
And it's coming.
So, Fred, this bait and switch, they now get around to, NASA points out, and Fox News dutifully reports, that they're investigating one of the moons of Saturn, Enceladus, to see if there's life up there, because, you know, there's water.
There's water.
Up there.
Oh, boy.
There's water.
Yeah.
And there's other compounds. But, Fred, it's the water that excites them because for decades they've said that water can have life originate. And they have misled the public, not admitting that water is the hurdle. Water is the problem. It's not the solution. Water is the problem because it dissolves almost all the molecules you need to build a living organism.
Yep. Bob, we're almost through the show, but Patterns of Evidence, the sequel, is coming out in the theaters.
Yes, yes. In just 2 weeks.
Yep. And our telethon is up to $24,000.
That's,
we could still use more help.
That's right.
And there's really lots of good resources.
The goal is at $40,000. So, Fred, the Exodus film that came out just a couple years ago in theaters nationwide, many were packed out, came back for a demand showing, a Fathom event, by Tim Mahoney, friend of Real Science Radio. Mm-hmm. We're going to have him back on within the next week or so. And his sequel is coming out. In fact, it'll be in theaters March 14th, 16th, and 19th. 900 screens it's showing on so far. And Fred, the sequel is such a fascinating part of the whole debate. The first show was the evidence of the Israelites in Egypt and then their mistreatment as slaves, their children dying in an epidemic of infant mortality, and then their sudden departure.
Yeah, and the timeline, they describe how the timeline fits with the Bible, because the secular Egyptologists have a totally different timeline.
Yes.
That movie does a great job of showing you what really fits the evidence.
Oh, so powerful.
And, you know, people I've talked to who watch that, it's one of the, they say it's one of the best, if not the best documentary they've ever seen.
Yes, and so the secular archaeologists who reject the Exodus, they say it never occurred. But when it never occurred was 1270 B.C. They have pretty much an exact date for something they believe never occurred. But all the evidence is not in the New Kingdom period. It's toward the end of the Middle Kingdom in Egypt. And the evidence for that corresponds with Genesis and Exodus. It's truly astounding.
So it's while they're there. So what's the sequel about?
The sequel is the attack by secular scholars who say, at first they say there was no alphabet in the time of Moses.
Hmm.
So Moses could not have written the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. Now, Jesus said that Moses wrote of me. So Jesus affirmed not only the historicity of Moses and the Exodus, but also that Moses wrote the first books of the Bible. So the brilliance of Tim Mahoney is he takes head on this argument that typically is only made by scholars, that there was no alphabet, that Hebrew originated like, you know, almost 1,000 years later, and it came off of the Phoenician alphabet. And he presents the powerful evidence that the first alphabet, the proto-consonantal alphabet, began in Egypt at the time when Joseph was made governor of Egypt by Amenemhat III, and that's when this Hebrew script first appeared. Then it disappears from Egypt, and it reappears in Israel, and then it appears later in other cultures, but it's modified.
So this is a Hebrew script.
It's the Hebrew alphabet.
Okay.
And you know, even our word alphabet comes from the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph and Beit, right? Hmm. So ox and house.
Yeah.
And many of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet are modeled after Egyptian hieroglyphs, which makes sense because Joseph is in Egypt where the scribes read and write hieroglyphs. But he then creates the Hebrew alphabet that they could teach their children, because you had to learn 1,000 different symbols to read and write hieroglyphics. And could you imagine teaching a kid the alphabet, 22 letters in the Hebrew? Imagine English, 26 letters, and then multiply that by 4, that's 100, and then by 10, that's 1,000. Imagine if a child had to learn 1,000 different symbols. How wildly difficult that is. Plus, it gets way more complicated. So the brilliance...
Sounds like Chinese to me.
Yes. Yeah. Pictographs.
Yeah.
So the brilliance of undoubtedly Joseph to reduce to symbols 22 sounds, phonetic sounds, that can then be combined in an infinite number of ways to communicate ideas without end.
Yeah.
Just brilliant.
It really is.
So that's the sequel showing the evidence that Hebrew is the first true alphabet and that it was available to Moses at the time of the Exodus.
So Moses didn't have to use a bunch of symbols and pictographs to write the Pentateuch.
Right, and Tim Mahoney, speaking to experts, points out that the first five books of Moses would have been like miles long in a scroll
true.
If he had to do it in hieroglyphics.
Yep. Wow.
That's the beauty in the condensed ability to communicate using an alphabet.
Yep.
That's why it took over the world. Do you ever see a Chinese typewriter? It's unbelievable, Fred. Yeah. It has hundreds of keys and very difficult to operate. And so now it's all, of course, digital.
Yep.
A lot easier. All right. You mentioned also the telethon. If anyone could help, I know that February's over, $24,000 is an incredible achievement. We're only on one radio station, but we still need your help. If you could somehow help us to reach that goal, a subscription to our Bible studies or our topical videos or the BEL Televised Classics, any subscription will help so much. And last thing, Fred, I've been invited to Alabama, Decatur, Alabama, to present to the church on Sunday morning, the adult Sunday school class, and at other events that weekend, Creation Apologetics. So this is Friday and Saturday, March 15th and 16th. It's coming right up, Northern Alabama. Yeah. If you live there, awesome. Come on out to the Fairview Baptist Church in Decatur. If you have to travel, it'd be an honor to see you there. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And what a courageous pastor to have an unabashed young earth creationist speak to his entire church. Good-sized church.
Yeah, and that's exciting. And, Bob, I pray your voice will be much better by then. But even if it isn't, it'll still work.
Yeah.
I mean, you plowed through this show with no problems.
Well, thank you very much. And we're expecting that it'll be better. So, Fred, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
Fred Williams and Bob Enyart for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
About.